When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The old world is dying. The new world struggles to be born. Now is the time of monsters. With those sentiments from Gramsci, as put into verbal form by Zizek, I welcome you to the Time of Monsters podcast. This week, I want to take up the sort of Republican primary race, which one might think is a little bit too early. I mean, it's a long ways until anyone starts voting. But there's a kind of primary before the primary, a primary, you know, that's dominated by donors and in the case of Republican, the sort of right-wing media. And it's kind of an interesting to see how there was an attempt to create a narrative, and that has totally faltered. That is to say, Donald Trump is running, and he has sort of natural advantages. He's already won the Republican nomination twice, in 2016 and 2020, and he's considered very favorably by most Republican voters. And, you know, he has name recognition that, you know, you could... that can't really be improved. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, who is more well known than Trump? Maybe his dining partner Kanye. And beyond that, you know, he's doing well in fundraising. But there was a counter narrative that was kind of set up, or an attempted narrative that one especially saw in the more sort of respectable precincts of the right, the sort of Wall Street Journal, National Review, which is that actually people were saying that the presumptive frontrunner is actually Ron DeSantis. And they were saying this because he was also doing well with fundraiser, and he had the sort of a lot of the establishment conservative media had jumped ship from Trump, especially the ones owned by Rupert Murdoch, but not just by the Murdoch brand, but certainly the Fox News is giving Trump much less attention than it did before. The Wall Street Journal, the same, and outlets like National Review have kind of, you know, become very hotbeds for pro DeSantis sentiments. And so the argument was, and you know, DeSantis was for a while polling quite well against Trump, like well ahead of any of the other candidates either declared or potential, like former Vice President Mike Pence or former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. You know, usually if Trump is getting, you know, 40 to 50, then DeSantis is behind there with 20 to 30. Having said that, I mean, I think some of us were always skeptical of whether DeSantis could pull this off. And now there are signs that he's running into a little bit of trouble even before he's announced. He's actually not running, he hasn't actually announced yet that he's running for president, but even now he's sort of faltering. Both in the polls, there's reports that various donors are kind of getting a bit nervous, like, you know, are we really going to put all our eggs in this basket? There's sort of the sort of leaks that are coming out from his staff are the ones that, you know, are typical of either campaigns that are faltering or perhaps the crew of the Titanic after they've landed on shore, you know, blaming the captain. I mean, we have reports of, you know, most memorably DeSantis's very disgusting eating habits. What exactly is going on here? So I am to discuss, Ron DeSantis and the sort of narrative that was built upon him and why it's good to be skeptical of it. I'm very happy to have on Alex Shepard, staff writer for The New Republic, who has written on this, and I'll link to his piece on it. But Alex, broadly, what do you think is going on?
Well, I think a bunch of things, but I think the biggest one is just that DeSantis himself is still a relatively new and inexperienced and relatively unknown commodity within Republican circles. He's been built up by the media, particularly after kind of flouting COVID requirements, you know, in the early-ish stage of the pandemic. And I think broadly speaking, he fit a bill that many people decided was what was going to work for a post-Trump candidate. It's kind of, he's been called by some people like Trump with a brain, or, you know, to some extent you can say Trumpism without Trump, that he is a sort of dyed-in-the-wool culture warrior. His politics in terms of the pandemic and the vaccine have generally been where Republican voters want them to be. He's a kind of, you know, a pugilistic culture warrior who, you know, if he was around 15 years ago, would have probably been a pretty standard or bog standard establishment Republican, but has sort of remade himself as this kind of culture warrior. But then, you know, as we've seen, I think over the last 6 weeks or so, like once the rubber has started to hit the road, a lot of his flaws have started to emerge. But also what we're seeing as well is that the dynamic in 2016, despite the fact that I think Trump is not the candidate that he was 8 years ago, he's much more erratic, he's much more self-obsessed, he is far less interested in the sort of policy, you know, the creative policy decisions that helped him, among other things, win the kind of the old blue wall states, that, you know, at the end of the day, when you get into the ring with Trump, you have to be prepared for what you're going to get. DeSantis should know this because we've seen this happen for 8 years now. And yet the moment Trump started attacking him, calling him, among other things, a pedophile, DeSantis has just looked weak and confused. And you're already starting to see his poll number shift. And there are already reports leaking out that donors are starting to bail as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. That the pattern that DeSantis is following is something we've actually seen with a lot of Republicans that have gone after Trump, both as sort of in the sort of primaries, but even in sort of like trying to challenge Trump on various issues. There's various times where Republican leaders like Mitch McConnell will like try to challenge Trump on something, and then, you know, Trump will send out a few nasty tweets about McConnell's Chinese wife, and then McConnell will back down. And it seems like friend and occasional podcast guest John Gomes has this kind of topology or taxonomy of fascist types, saying that there's like on the one hand the sort of jocks and the creeps, you know, the jocks are like the Mussolini types, you know, who are like we're big brawny men, and we want bullies who will, like, you know, push you around. And the creeps are the, you know, the guys who are like nervously reading books on race science and planning various mad experiments, you know, the people that were basically the hardcore Nazis that surrounded Hitler, especially in the last days. John has suggested, you know, on this taxonomy, you know, like Trump is the classic jock, and DeSantis is the classic nerdy creep. And it seems to me like bizarre to think, like, you know, why would primary voters, you know, go for the creep against the jock? You might want the creep. You know, and then Trump had creeps around him. He had Stephen Miller, right? Like, he had, yeah. You want those creeps to be like, you know, you put them in charge of immigration so they can figure out how to cage children. But you're not putting Stephen Miller like on the stage, right? Like, so it does seem like, you know, like you're putting a bully against a nerd as your champion against the bully. And it's just like, that seems like a key strategic mistake.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, there's one issue here, which is, you know, that I think part of DeSantis's appeal is that, I mean, Florida is a big state, but he was not really a national figure before the pandemic. And even then, he's not super well tested. So you could kind of project whatever you wanted onto him. And now that we're seeing it, what we're seeing is this kind of somewhat awkward, impersonal, short guy who just doesn't have a lot of juice. Just jumping off what you were just saying, I would kind of add two things. One is that I think I think Republican elites in particular looked at Trump's status within the party, which is slipping. Like, I don't think that that's crazy to say, or at least it has been slipping. It's recovered, I think, recently. But it's not to the extent that it was, that they looked at this and they thought, well, you know, we can find somebody new to do this. But DeSantis is actually dealing with the exact same incentive structure that Republicans like Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush even had in 2016, which is that you still need the Trump voters, right? Like, Trump still commands a group of several million, you know, probably in the low tens of millions, who these candidates are looking at, and they say, well, these are people that I'm going to have to convert at some point if I'm the nominee. So they feel like they have to give Trump the kid glove treatment. And I think also because they know that, you know, Trump is a counter puncher. But what we've seen is that DeSantis has been reluctant to go after Trump, to sort of get in the mud with him, partly because I think he knows he'll lose, but also because he's trying to play this long game. And we know already that doesn't work. I mean, I think, look, you know, Marco Rubio also eventually tried to get in the mud by saying that Trump had small hands and whatever else in 2016, but that was much, much later in the process. I think
I think Rubio and Ted Cruz are good examples because, yeah, they did initially, you know, use the same logic. Well, you know, we want to get those Trump voters so we can attack him. And that made them look weak. And then when they did lash out at Trump, they like looked even worse because they're not, their whole personality type and the type of politician they are is not the sort of brawler that Trump is, and so it looked fake. It, you know, like for Rubio to go on and, you know, like you kind of give a euphemistic version, but I mean, he's basically saying that Trump has a small penis. And like, the thing is, you can't really like get into that sort of, you know, like if you're like you know, a well manicured politician like Rubio, like if you start talking like that, you just look like, well, you're that just confirms how weak you are, like the you're admitting that Trump's style of politics is more successful and that you've had to adopt it, and so I think like all it's always that dynamic. It's, as you mentioned, it's partially, you know, wanting those Trump voters, but then also, you know, like it just clashes with everything else that they're selling, because they're selling like expertise, like I'm a professional Republican committed to the party, and I will carry through the party's agenda. And but you can't do that and like, you know, act like Trump. I mean, the structural advantage is really that Trump is like, you know, even though he gives the Republicans everything they want, he is like personally not committed to the party. And like, there's always a sense that he could, like, you know, one day, like, you know, like Samson, just like, you know, like, I'm just going to pull this whole thing down because they're not giving me what he wants. And then that's a good position to be in. And everyone else is a party man. They're all apparatchiks. They all, and so they will not, like, you know, they can't threaten to destroy the party the way Trump can.
Well, yeah, this is exactly it, right? Where Trump, by going this sort of scorched earth route, he's also forcing every other candidate to play his way.
Yeah.
You know, I won't use the sports metaphor, but in general, like, he does dictate the style of play, and that's his huge advantage, because I think even though he was the president of the United States, he still looks like an outsider in a lot of these fights, because they allow him to, I mean, again, no other political candidate, certainly no other mainstream political candidate would ever call somebody else a pedophile based on one picture that was posted on a website hosted by the Krasenstein brothers. But Trump does this. And I think when DeSantis tries to push back, as with other candidates, it only reinforces the fact that Trump is a different type of Republican. And I think one of the things that has been so badly misunderstood with DeSantis is, I think that a bunch of people in both Republican elite circles, but also Republican politicians themselves, actually have looked at Trump and said, okay, what people want is Trumpism without Trump. If we can do all of the policy stuff that Trump does, then, you know, but with only 60% of the chaos, I mean, there'll still be chaos because they're all ungovernable, but that this will help us win. And DeSantis, I think, has really followed this rigidly. He's adopted almost every Trump position. He's only recently started to back down on Ukraine. The big wedge between them is that, you know, Trump made the vaccine and DeSantis, you know, says that the vaccine kills people. And that's not true. I think, you know, there are things that voters like policy wise with Trump, but in general, they like Trump. They like the fact that he's a brawler. They like the pugilism. They like the chaos, because all of that goes to show that he's not a normal politician. And all of the stuff, the sort of message discipline and the adoption of, you know, Trump's largely incoherent policy portfolio with a few different shades, you know, it just doesn't work. And again, it goes to this other weird thing where it just reinforces Trump's old brand, which is outside chaos agent, which I think worked really well, when in fact I think that there's probably a better way to go at him, which is to do what Trump did, right? To make, this is a guy that ran the Republican Party for 4 years, right? That did a lot of things that I think Republican voters don't particularly like. And I think that, you know, that's treating Trump as a generic Republican, much like treating Republicans as generic Republicans and not MAGA Republicans, as Biden and a lot of Democrats do, has actually been a pretty good electoral policy over the last 8 years.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. In some ways, there's a fundamental incoherence to what the Trumpism without Trump is doing, partially because, as you said, people don't want that. They want Trumpism with Trump. Like, if you could have a choice between Trumpism without Trump and Trumpism with Trump, why would you choose Trumpism without Trump? Like, because of the policies? Like, is that really why people, like, you know, like, got on board this thing? No, of course not. And in some ways, the personality, you know, the vulgarity and the, you know, anti-systems thinking and the conspiratorialism and the nastiness, those are all policy in their own way. They're ways of, you know, like, thumbing your nose at the system. But also, like, if you're saying I'm offering Trumpism without Trump, you're basically saying, well, you know, Trump is good. And that's all the position of all the Republican candidates. And, you know, Trump was a great president, but I'll give you that, but with, like, less entertaining. Like, you know, like, okay. So, like, if you're a voter, like, you know, like, oh, this, you know, Trump's going to give me Trumpism and be entertaining, and this guy's gonna give me Trumpism and be this kind of, like, very weird, awkward guy, you know, who might have gross eating habits in private. I don't know. It just does not seem up to it. And in some ways, I mean, McKay Coppin had a good piece in The Atlantic about the sort of difficulties of Mike Pence, which sort of reflect on this, that Pence is, you know, normally, like, a former vice president does, you know, quite well. It's a little bit unique circumstances because the former vice president now running against his, you know, the former president, and that might be Mike Pence's problem. But the other problem is, McKay Coppin of The Atlantic sat in on focus groups, you know, like, nobody really likes Mike Pence. I mean, they might think, like, okay, he's a good, religious, pious man. But the big problem is that Pence has used his political, like, strength and the support that he had to validate Trump and say, like, you know, like, I'm a Christian. You know, I know we hear these stories about Trump, but, you know, like, he's supporting what we do. And people, Pence was successful. He gave that stamp of approval, and now Trump has it. And if that's the case, that if, you know, like, you validated Trump, and now you're running against him, how does that make any sense? Like, you're both saying, like, you know, I supported Trump in 2016 and in 2020, and, you know, like, and I'm going to carry out all his policies, but, you know, don't vote for him, vote for me. Like, it's just, like, I don't even understand the logic of, like, why you would think that's a good position to put forward.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is what we're running into, I think, is, I mean, we're still early in the primary season, but no one has figured out, you know, despite all of the time that they've had, how to run as a distinct candidate from Donald Trump, at least in terms of both policy and really approach in a lot of ways. And, you know, Pence has been the most aggressive in terms of, you know, saying, well, I mean, and DeSantis has only recently, in his interview with Piers Morgan, that was, I think, last week, started to try to outline this thing, which is like, oh, this guy is chaotic, but, you know, I will do all of the great things that Trump did, but efficiently, you know, and without all this other noise. And, you know, I mean, not to repeat myself, but I think that the noise is the appeal for Trump. And I think, as you just mentioned with Pence, that you know, there's also this other bizarre thing in which, you know, the Pence vice presidential pick, to the extent that it was useful at all, was useful electorally 7 years ago, right? It may have or may not have shielded Trump from various criticisms that he was, I mean, he's obviously a fake Christian. He obviously has, you know, no interest in piety or scripture, but very quickly became clear that evangelicals in particular liked him in spite of all those things, or perhaps because of them. And I think that that gave, you know, Pence, even by the standards of a vice president, was particularly lost, because, you know, if he wasn't going to be Donald Trump's faith translator or something, then he has nothing. And I think he's been a kind of man without a purpose for a long time. And then, you know, in some ways was weirdly given a gift in the form of the fact that the supporters of the former president literally tried to lynch him in the United States Capitol, which I think should have shook a lot of this stuff loose. You know, I mean, he's been the most vocally critical candidate of or presumed candidate of Trump thus far. But that's all been pretty weak. And, you know, in spite of all this, he hasn't kind of unleashed. And, you know, that it should be freeing. But I think, as you said, too, it's just part of the problem is that all of these people have decided for kind of venal political reasons to just kind of resemble and repeat Donald Trump in most ways. And so the big distinction between them and him at this point is he's Donald Trump and they're not. And I think that people with DeSantis in particular, the assumption that the folks at the Wall Street Journal editorial board made was that's good. That's good politically. People want something different than Donald Trump. And I think what we're seeing is that that is not true.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, it seems like there is a constituency for people who like Trump's policies but are embarrassed by Trump, but that doesn't seem like either a majority or even a plurality of Republican Party. And in particular, like, if you really narrow down that people who want Trumpism without Trump, it is like, you know, the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, the staff writers for National Review, some of the people on Fox, maybe not all of them even.
The Bulwark, and the Dispatch.
It's like, and basically it's like people who, like, you know, they want, you know, like these right-wing policies, but not to be like embarrassed by it, or they find, you know, Trump personally uncouth and vulgar. That's not like, I don't know. I mean, that doesn't seem like the basis of a distinct politics or like anything very meaningful. Yeah. I don't see a majority coalition. And what you said about Pence is, it is very interesting that he has been more critical of Trump than anyone else. But even he, like, always kind of pulls his punches and will also like give kind of support for Trump. And I think that this is this thing I would like underscore, that if you're like a, you know, conservative or right-wing Republican, Trump was a very successful president. I mean, like, you know, like people say, like, oh, how shameful that the party of Reagan has become the party of Trump. But like, you know, like Reagan, you know, like if you're conservative, you know, like at the time, a lot of conservatives, including people who worked for Reagan, like Pat Buchanan, said, this guy's selling us out. You know, he put Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. He's talking to the Russians, you know, like, whereas Trump, I mean, like, you know, like, put three hard, you know, right-wing Federalist Society maniacs on the court, you know, who overturned Roe v. Wade, and who are going to be, like, there for decades to come, pushing the United States, like, in a really, like, you know, far more to the right than any of the judges that Reagan or even appointed. You know, like, he gave tax cuts to the rich. He, like, you know, amped up the military industrial complex. For the Tucker Carlson types, he didn't start new wars. He like pulled out of.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
The Iran nuclear deal pulled out of the Paris climate agreement. I mean, he actually moved the American embassy to Jerusalem. He gave a lot of things to a lot of core Republican constituencies. I think properly, the people treat Trump supporters as if they're crazy. But if those are the things you want, then Trump has given you things. He's like Santa Claus.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and on that point too, the biggest, I would argue that these things were instrumental in helping him win in 2016, but the biggest kind of forms of apostasy were all things that he backed away from to some extent, right? There was on free trade, right? He was certainly more protectionist than any Republican president in recent memory had been, but it was never to the extent that, that he had promised or that one had even expected. And again, I think that explains a lot of, a lot of the pullback, and it's one of the reasons why he lost in 2020. He campaigned aggressively on protecting Social Security and Medicare. He's starting to do that again, but by the end of his term, he was still proposing budgets, and budgets that weren't going to pass, but budgets that would have cut or altered these programs. Similarly, as you said, he passed the tax cut. And again, too, even on foreign policy, he campaigned as much more of a peacenik in 2016 than how he governed. Yeah, he didn't get us involved in a foreign war, but he still embraced, I think, a pretty pugilistic foreign policy, albeit one that, suggested a kind of realignment with various authoritarians. But again, if you look at his China policy, right, it's a pretty aggressive foreign policy that and involved it both not just in China but also in the Middle East the threat of using military force, even if he had always sort of I think in these cases every instance in which he moved towards the establishment position in almost every way.
I think that's right. And a lot of the concerns that people had about him, even among the Republican establishment, were assaged. And he did, put in people John Bolton into foreign policy to so there was a kind of, reconciliation of Trumpism with the Republican Party already. And if that's the case, then, what's the problem? Why not run him again, except that you kind of find it embarrassing? But also, the Social Security Medicare thing, it's a kind of a, I think that was a major factor in his, being able to sort of get the upper hand against rivals in 2016, that, he could bring in these kind of white working class voters, because he said, quite frankly, I'm not going to touch Medicare and Social Security, and with the implication that the other ones will, and which is, a true thing. And I think as you said, he's doing it again with DeSantis. And again, it has a plausibility. You can kind of think that, Trump, as you said, he might put forward budgets that have this, but they're not going to pass. Whereas, in some ways, DeSantis's very argument, I'm effective, works against him, because this guy will be the one who will touch Medicare and Social Security. And I think, especially if the Republican Party, has become more the party of non-college whites, then, this has become... this is a kind of major problem.
Yeah. And I think, also the process of reconciliation, I think perhaps ironically, was also instrumental, I think, in terms of Trump's takeover of the Republican Party as well, which is that, I think partly just by virtue of the fact that he had no idea what he was doing in the transition and was just sort of, just needed to get bodies on the ground, boots on the ground. The initial Trump White House was, it's not so dissimilar to, at least in terms of the big appointments, to what you would see from any other Republican who would have won, right? And I do think that Trump learned from that, for worse, for the most part, and he was like, I don't want to deal with any of these establishment people anymore. I mean, the Bolton feud, basically every feud that he's had with any former secretary there, But I think that those fights actually strengthened his grip on the power and grip on the party, and I think helped excommunicate a lot of his critics within the establishment. And that, you know, only further weakens the sort of Republican Party that's, I think, trying to wrest back control, or at least get, you know, a guy that they feel like they can work with. Whereas, you know, Trump is campaigning again in some ways not dissimilarly to the way that he did in 2015, which is shocking given his influence within the party, given the fact that he again was literally president. But, you know, I think this ongoing fight, you know, with Pence and with DeSantis, Haley to a lesser extent, you know, he's starting to make the case that he's an outsider again, and the presence of these types of candidates is actually just strengthening that message.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it is weird and to think of Trump running as an outsider, yes, you know, yes. except that, I mean, if the alternative is DeSantis, if the alternative is the guy whose like entire political case is that, you know, I can keep the Trump voters on while keeping making the donors and the people at the think tanks and the Wall Street Journal happy, then like Trump does look like an outsider, you know, compared to DeSantis. He is like, DeSantis is like even much more a sort of programmatic apparatchik than, like, you know, in your article said, you know, like, you know, comparable to Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. Like he's a man of the party, a man of the system in a way that, like, yeah, Trump, you know, for all his reconciliation with the party, it isn't quite. So in some ways, yeah, like by putting DeSantis up as the main opponent of Trump, they are, you know, like, ironically, in some ways, strengthening Trump's position and strengthening his claims. And in some ways, I mean, I think that Ukraine flip-flop where he, like, you know, tried to both please the kind of Trumpist argument, well, you know, why are we getting involved with Ukraine, and then, you know, backtracking to a more conventional Republican. Like, you know, like, if you're a Trumpist voter, then you look at that and you think, like, oh, yeah, this guy, you know, he's a total puppet of the globalist. Like, you know, the you know, like... Soros with three brackets around his name, you know, yeah. Put in the phone call, and then the DeSantis is one of them. You know, and then like from the conspiratorial, I mean, I'm talking about the real hardcore Trumpist here mindset, then DeSantis is the perfect foil.
Well, I think, I mean, not to get back into the world's most tired conversation, which is, you know, do Trump supporters take him seriously or literally? But I do think that people discount the vibes-based nature of Trump's appeal, which is that, which again, I'm getting into this, they take him seriously, but not literally thing. But I do think that a lot, like the metaphorical power of these statements is actually really important. It's the fact that Trump is willing to say things that are not the status quo. They reinforce his willingness to break the existing order that these people detest. And I think that, for a lot of very understandable personal and political reasons, no other Republican candidate is as willing to do that. But as soon as he starts it, then there's nothing else that they can really do, because DeSantis, again, is stuck with the fact that at the end of the day, he's one trying to please two groups that are probably incompatible in a lot of ways, which is a kind of Washington elite consensus view and voters. And he's also thinking in the back of his mind, how am I going to actually govern if I'm elected? And Donald Trump doesn't care about any of that stuff. He just says, yeah, you know, let's let Putin take it. It's not our problem. And he doesn't have to think, no one says, well, then what would you do about Belarus or, you know, or the Baltic states or, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's
going to make a deal. He's going to make the best deal ever. He's going to, like, it'll be over in a week. He and Putin will sit down and talk, and, you know, they're going to make a deal. That's, don't you understand that, Alex? This is how it's going to happen. Yeah. Okay, so yeah. don't talk about plans. It's deals. We're in the world of the vibe is deals. so yeah, no, it does seem I mean, there are ways of, like, could imagine DeSantis could have, if he were more, you know, a politician with more finesse and more flexibility, could have adopted some of that vibes-based thing by just saying, you know, like saying what Eisenhower said with Korea and what Nixon said with Vietnam, you know, like I have a plan to solve this problem. You know, like I won't talk, tell you about it because it'll like unleash it. But you know, like I will go to Moscow or whatever. You know, like I will, you know, like that would. But there's ways. DeSantis seems too bound by convention to like kind of to do
Well,
that.
one of the things that we haven't talked about, which is, I think pretty instructive here, is that I actually think that DeSantis's the theory behind the Ron DeSantis candidacy is actually like not bad in Republican circles, which is that he's the Florida governor, right? Florida is the state where people don't tell you what to do. Everywhere else, there are all these oppressive liberals who are telling you what you can say and what you can think, and they're making your children hate you and, you know, making them unrecognizable to you. And in Florida, like they have, you know, stood athwart history and yelled stop. And not just that, like this is the one place where they have fun, right? Like this is the place that stayed open during COVID. It's still America there. I don't necessarily think that that's the worst like theory behind a Republican candidate, but Ron DeSantis is not, he's not like a loose guy. He's not John Belushi. He's not, he brings none of that like energy to any of this. Instead, he in some ways resembles a kind of Mike Pence, this guy who just seems really ill at ease in public. He does not strike you as a kind of Republican voter, whereas, you know, I mean, Trump obviously is a huge phony. He, you know, was not a Republican in most key respects until relatively recently. Doesn't really care, you know, clearly holds most of his voters in complete contempt. And yet I think he, that kind of attitude, the, you know, like the F it attitude, I think translates in this way. And it's seen as authentic in spite of the fact that Trump is so self-evidently and obviously a fraud in so many other ways. And that's, I think, the deficit. It's both vibes and authenticity. And I think there's just almost no way for DeSantis, or I think frankly any other Republican in this race, to make up for that. I have caveats for that, but I can save them for later.
No. I mean, we should say like we're very early days. I mean, like I wouldn't like necessarily write DeSantis off. I just think it's very interesting that he's faltering right now and that he's like running into these difficulties. I mean, like you know, like you know, like we're, anything could happen.
Yeah,
You know,
well,
like
yeah, well, I
even
guess
if there,
I would say.
but.
Yeah, I would say two things just to throw in there. I think one is that I think DeSantis's political profile has grown in part because people haven't looked under the hood, right? And once you do, you see Pudding Ron or whatever, this kind of weird guy. But I think that Trump's has also benefited from a lack of media coverage, which seems insane given, you know, how much hand-wringing that there's been. But, you know, I've ha had to, just by virtue of our job, you know, stay more or less up to date on him. And he is weird. Like he's gotten so much more myopic. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, no, you mentioned that before, and I'm glad you came back to this because it's actually a very good point. And this is actually a weak, yeah, we should talk about some of Trump's weaknesses. And it is a case, I mean, you know, in 2016, I mean, like, you know, this is something that liberals and Democrats, especially Hillary Clinton kind of supporters, don't want to admit. But, you know, Trump did put like some compelling issues on the table. And that did shake loose people that, like normally do not vote Republican, and, you know, especially in the blue wall states. I mean, like, you know, like I just think back, you know, there are speeches that he gave in Pennsylvania that were like, you know, for Trump, surprisingly focused. And they did have this very clear message on like, you know, trade, China, the immigration, wages, you know, like they just tied everything together in a very nice way. You know, and America first. And like you know like that could like appeal to those white non-college voters, and you know like whereas like now you know for a variety of reasons like you know like he's much more addressing you know not the sort of you know union guy you know who might be dis not want to support a pro-NAFTA Democrat,
Yeah.
but he's addressing, like, you know, QAnon people, you know, and
This
he's addressing people who are, like, you know, like Matt, still angry about David Koresh and think, like, you know, the federal government, you know, like, you know, which it did do, like, it committed a huge crime, but that it should be avenged. He's addressing people who think that David Koresh should be avenged, and
Yes.
which is, you know, there are people that are out there like that, but I think that that's a lot fewer than the sort of, you know, union guys that don't like NAFTA.
Well, I think the big difference, I might oversimplify a little, but you could make the case that the core of Donald Trump's argument in 2016 was the political establishment from both parties is out to get you. And I know because I was part of that establishment and I can be your advocate as somebody who was on the in I was or am I am slash was one of the elite. And I can fight for you because I know all the ways that you're being screwed. And now it's literally just they're out to get me.
Yeah.
And I think that still has some appeal. You know, you can extend things beyond that. But so much of it is your favorite president is being victimized by the liberal state. And I think it is almost impossible to. I mean, look, I don't want to overstate how focused Trump was in 2016, but the Trump argument in heading into 2024 is like almost completely, it's so convoluted. It involves so many little plot points involving January 6th. You have to know who Ashley Babbitt is. You got to know all the, you know, you have to know various attorney generals and secretaries of state that have occupied their positions in at least six states around the country for 5 years. And it doesn't have the same appeal. So I do think that, you know, I just think that you know, Trump has been boring, you know, which is something that has rarely been the case, and I think he's having an adversary again has given him some juice, but for the most part, you watch these things and you're just like, they're exhausting.
Yeah, no, exactly. I perhaps to use a strain metaphor, but I'm gonna put it out there. I think Trump suffers the same problem as the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is that, like, you know, when you first start with, like, they're introducing Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk and Thor, you're like, oh, exciting, you know, like there's all these characters and it's something new and different. But, you know, like by the time you're now at like phase five and there's like you have to have an extended knowledge of the MCU and realize how WandaVision relates to Ant-Man, relates to the multiverse and Doctor Strange, and like it's only the hardcore fans that can even like keep up. And like to understand any one of these movies, you have to have a Wikipedia. Read like, you know, like 100 Wikipedia entries, or have spent like, you know, 200 hours watching previous movies, then it becomes like much more esoteric and much more strange. And yeah, there is a kind of Trump cinematic universe that has been created. There are people who are into the Trump cinematic universe. Yeah. There, it is a sort of like Marvel fandom. It's a participatory fandom. Where, you know, fans also end up creating things and doing cosplay, and you see the sort of Trump hardcore Trump fans at these rallies. But yeah, it doesn't have the same mass appeal. There's continuity. I mean, there's a way in which I'm the insider. I know how they're going to screw you. I will champion you. There's a continuity between that and the new argument, which is they're getting to me so they can get to you. But now the argument is much more me. Like they're going after me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just feel like that has less mass appeal. The sort of classic Trumpism of 2016, which again, we shouldn't overstate how coherent it was or whatever, but there was actually something really there. Like there was an actual, you know, anti-system, anti-establishment politics, which, you know, he was never going to carry through, and which was like, you know, but you know, you can see why some people put faith in that. Whereas now it's like, you know, people who are aggrieved. But having said that, I mean, I think that you know, there are Republican voters who have that, you know, sense of aggrievement, you know, from 2020 and just from living in Joe Biden's America, you know, and there is a way in which, you know, if you, you know, believe in the sort of, you know, Fox worldview that there's this tyranny of wokeism that is running through the land, and this is why your grandkids won't talk to you. that really, like, who is gonna like actually stand up for you? Like, is it gonna be this dweeby Florida governor, who might be passing a few laws, or what could break wokeism? It's a cultural complaint. And, it's not a legislative complaint, right? It's like people aren't happy about where the culture is going. And, to have Trump, he's a former president, reality show star, that's a big part of the appeal. Like, he's of celebrity culture, but he thinks like I do. If it's a culture where you're after, Trump still seems like a more plausible candidate.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that one of the reasons why, well, there are a lot of reasons why, but one of the biggest reasons why the Republican Party has become so culture war obsessed is I think that Trump, the extent to which Donald Trump disrupted the Republican Party has, I think, probably been accurately understood. But I think that there are various attempts to claim that he had sort of realigned it fundamentally. And I'm not entirely sure that that's true. I think basically he scrambled the domestic policy agenda in a lot of ways, particularly on economic policy. I mean, yes, he passed this gigantic tax cut that any other Republican would have passed, but particularly on trade, and as we're seeing now with the knots that Kevin McCarthy is having to tie himself in over the budget, there isn't really a coherent economic agenda for Republicans the way that there was in the post-Reagan era. On foreign policy, again, he sort of broke the neoconservative hold on the Republican Party, but he didn't really replace it with anything. So I think what you saw, he won, I think, in 2016, in part because a lot of voters didn't like Republican domestic policy, right? A lot of voters didn't like Republican foreign policy. He was able to say, and to some extent accomplished, that he was a different type of Republican. But now the problem with running against him is that nobody really knows what the Republican Party is on all these issues.
Yeah.
So they just keep falling back on talking about increasingly esoteric, ideas about, how hot the M&Ms should be or whatever. The other thing that I was going to say just briefly is I do think the one policy area that we haven't really seen a lot of movement on, but that Trump is vulnerable on, which is disturbing, is the vaccine. Like, I think that Trump loves the vaccine. He's back to, he doesn't talk about it anymore, but he's made a ton of public statements about the vaccine. I think if pressed, it remains, the extent to which he deserves credit for it is, I would say, unknown, but it's probably relatively small since any president would have done it. But that's a foundational part of his legacy. Republicans hate the vaccine. I think DeSantis has got a wedge there. I think that weirdly, that's one of the areas in which Trump could be gotten at. It's just a question of whether or not. I mean, obviously, this is all very dark to imagine, but I think that's the one area for me where I think there's true vulnerability. And I think if you are a candidate that is like Ron DeSantis, I think willing to just go to extremes, then, you could probably make some hay there.
Yeah, no, I think it remains to be seen, but I think you're right. That is a kind of potential wedge. Although, Trump is sort of already sort of proactively responding to that by saying that DeSantis closed the beaches and, other Republicans allowed much more freedom in terms of doing the shutdowns. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, we'll see how this plays out in the coming months, but I think we've given a good sort of survey of the state of the battlefield as it stands. So once again, Alex Shepard of the New Republic, I'm very grateful for you coming here.
Oh, it's always nice to talk to you again.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com. When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.